Hello and welcome to Platforms and Pitfalls. I'm Rowan.
And I'm Blue.
And we are here to talk about game design. This month, we're talking about how games make themselves simpler, in theory at least, through their controls. So we're going to focus on simple inputs. Maybe not necessarily one button, but at the very least, very few buttons.
I mean, the list started as a two-button thing.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, one of them technically, you could argue, is four. But anyway,
yeah.
The way that we interface with games is through controls, obviously. And I think that by simplifying controls, we can really get at some of the core compelling things about certain genres. And so I think it's a really interesting way to look at certain genres. But today we're looking at how the inputs themselves, I think, affect the design. And that's more our focus for today, I think.
I want to have a small segue here. We often conflate, probably incorrectly, like how complicated a game is via control with how complicated a game is. And certainly, I think the first couple of games we're going to be talking about are like very simple to pick up. That some would, if you were in the realm of like categorizing games this way, you would consider them casual games, right? But the rest of our list, as we keep going, they only work once you're more familiar with the medium. And I think that's super interesting because all of the games on this list are very simple. In terms of understanding the controls, anyone, even if they've never played a game before, can pick it up. They won't be amazing at it straight away, but they'll be able to play it and understand like the effects of their decisions. But like how impactful and like actually how much a game connects with someone, that might depend on more than that, on more than just controls. It might depend on how well someone can understand the language of the game. Media literacy has been on my mind a lot these past few months. And this is a great example. Just because you make a game simpler doesn't mean you make your game more approachable.
And in some cases, not that we've got an example on the list, in some places, like by oversimplifying your input scheme, you can make it more complicated.
Yeah. Games were removed from this list because of that. Yeah, totally. Honorable mention, Divekick's not going to be on this list, and Divekick is a great example. It like just synthesizes a lot of the fundamental movement of fighting games down to two buttons without movement, not included. And it's just so complicated, despite the fact that it's two buttons.
By removing directional input and just having it as two buttons, it ended up making things more complicated than a lot of regular fighting games can be for people, even if it cut out a lot of other things. But to start with, our first game only uses one button, one half of Divekick's input set.
Flappy Bird is a 2013 auto-scroller developed by, and I apologize in advance for attempting this name, Dong Nguyen. After about a year on the market, people caught on to this very simple, very addictive game. And then the developer felt uncomfortable with the amount of attention it was receiving. Certainly not the last time it happened, but it's one of the early examples of this happening. And then they just removed it from the store. They just didn't want to deal with it. Because there's a lot of attention and scrutiny that comes with making a popular game like this. And it's hard to understate how much of a market the mobile stores are. And even back then were, right? Like, this is...
Yeah, like, this was big enough that he was earning supposedly around 50,000 USD in ads a day at the height of this, which is a lot. Like, if you think about how little ad revenue a single person can give a game, like, that is just a phenomenal amount of people consuming that work.
So, with that said, what is Flappy Bird? And this is, like, this is the beauty of it, right? It is a game where your screen is continuously moving left to right, passing you through auto-generated terrain, I think?
Auto-generated terrain, that's right. It's not, so it's randomly designed. You can only see about three pipes ahead as you're trying to jump between two very Mario-like pipes that are coming from top to bottom with a small gap.
The catch is that you do not control whether your character is moving or not. Your bird is always moving left to right. And the only way to control the height, which is whether or not you make it through the pipes, is a jump, effectively, a flap, hence the name Flappy Bird. It feels odd to describe the mechanics of Flappy Bird as it's probably one of the most popular games we've talked about. And not just like in the sense that gamers know this game, but it is the most casually approachable game I think we've ever talked about.
Yeah, and like this, the legacy of this game, despite having not been available for, you know, a little bit less than 10 years, like you can still see Flappy this, Flappy that as like a term on the App Store. It's just a name that you see on mobile to this day.
Didn't this kick off the verb-y noun phenomenon in mobile games?
I'm going to say yes, but I have no reason to know that necessarily.
After this came Crossy Road. So for those who may not be aware, there was a period of about 2 to 3 years where verb-e and then noun was a way to make a game catch people's attention on the mobile space. Flappy Bird, Crossy Road. I don't remember any other examples. Those are the big ones, because Crossy Road is the one that really tried to capitalize on it.
Yeah, there are others, I'm sure, though.
There are others, yeah. Yeah. So
there's just a lot of, like, Flappy and then different noun. Flappy Rabbit, Flappy this, yeah. Flappy that.
Yeah. And we're talking a lot around what the game's impact is, because the game itself is that simple. It is just whether or not you can make it through the pipes.
And there's an important distinction between this and other autorunners, which is that unlike autorunners where you're on the ground by default and you jump up and you control how high you go with that jump by how long you hold it, depending on the autorunner, of course. In Flappy Bird, you are always falling effectively as you're moving forwards, and you have to press regularly to flap up. And because if you hit the ground, you also lose. The floor is lava. So this means that unlike a lot of other things where you're sort of waiting for the moment to jump, in this you're always pressing the button at a fairly even rhythm, speeding it up if you need to get higher and slowing it down if you need to get lower, but you never stop pressing it for like any particular length of time.
And one of the common ways to die in Flappy Bird, or one of the common frustrating ways to die in Flappy Bird, is when you checkmate yourself. So one thing that's going to happen a few times throughout this this episode is simple inputs means that the complexity space, the difficulty in the game, comes from decision making.
Whether you do or don't press something.
Yeah, do or don't. And the common way to screw up and die in Flappy Bird is overzealously going up, because you can control how fast you go up. You cannot control how fast you go down. As in, you cannot speed up the rate at which you descend. You can speed up the rate at which you ascend, but not the rate at which you descend, which means that the downward hanging pipes are the real threat, because you cannot. There are situations where you will be in where you cannot sink fast enough to make it under one if you overzealously tap up. And that's basically it. And because it's so simple, a lot of people got into it. A lot of people with phones. 2013 is not long ago, but long ago enough that it's hard to remember the context of that era. It is the point where most people had a smartphone, but not everyone did. Like it's still on the end of that. Very soon, smartphones would become ubiquitous as the only kinds of phones around. You would have to have a good reason to go back.
We were still in like the era of ad-based games. We hadn't fully transitioned.
Oh, we still are in that era.
We are to some extent. Now it's more common, I think. Like, we hadn't hit the era of gacha yet.
No, that's right.
And similar sorts of systems. Like, we're still like some of those games existed, but like we haven't really gotten into Granblue existing and things like that. That would be for another year or two.
Yeah, the big names weren't there yet.
So ad-supported games, like, more so than today, one of the bigger ways that free-to-play games worked on the App Store.
There was also a notion that a lot of mobile games were ports of Facebook games. And this was not. This was a mobile game first.
And it was also extremely short because, I was looking up some statistics on FlappyBird.io, which is sort of a online port of the game, or reverse engineering of the game. And they had stats that are like, only about 3% of games go for longer than 10 points, which is you get a point for every single pipe you get past. And 10 pipes would only take you about, 15 seconds?
20 seconds, yeah.
Yeah. Not a long time. Unlike other autorunners, which might take you a minute for a full run before you might die. In this game, most of the time, you'll be able to get 5 or 6 runs in before it's your turn at the cash register or whatever the activity you're waiting to do is when you've pulled out your phone.
Yeah, this had a notoriety of being a tough as nails game.
This is the Dark Souls of mobile games.
It was, yeah, for sure. It, like, people were unironically talking about it in those terms back then, which is weird for a single button game. And that's it. That's basically all there, you know, there is to this game. It's just single button hard.
Single button hard. I do want to say, like, this does still, like, really condense a lot of, like, platforming thinking. It's about looking ahead to where you need to be and what jump you need to do to get there. While, you know, in Mario and things, you're mainly looking like, can I get enough speed to make that jump? Will I not overshoot that jump if I have go too far or whatever? You don't have a lot of those, like, mid-jump adjustments or anything. So you've got to commit to your action a bit earlier.
Tying it back to something that I hope I can thread through this episode is decision making is such a key part of this. And that's where it's very interesting that the design space means that the decision making and the game literacy comes after people have already picked it up and understood the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's hard for people to get more than the average, because it requires you to understand, not to make this sound like this, you know, high and noble pursuit, but, like, to be honest, if you don't understand video games, you don't understand what you're doing wrong sometimes.
Very true. Like, you need knowledge to understand mistakes.
There's nothing bad, inherently bad about that, but, like, that's part of why this is so casual and so approachable that a lot of people get it wrong. They may not think about how much more complex the game state and decision making is beyond just, oh, I made it past that one. You know, they have a greedy approach to obstacles, to problem solving. Solve the problem immediately in front of you, whereas the game is asking you to solve, you know, that problem and the one after as well. And then that's the rub of it, right? That's the challenge of it. But yeah.
And with that, let's move on to our next game. Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix is a 2015 rhythm action game developed by Nintendo SPD, directed by Masami Yone, and produced by Tsunku, which is his artist name, as he was a music performer. So Rhythm Heaven shares a lot of DNA with the WarioWare franchise and is a series of rhythm minigames that almost all of them either only use A or have very limited additional inputs. So rhythm action games are a really interesting genre in this discussion because by their nature, a lot of them are fairly simple mechanically. So a lot of them are, you see a bunch of inputs and you press the inputs that you're told to press. And you can vary up the complexity of a game by how many different inputs you have. So in something like Guitar Hero, the easier difficulty modes use less buttons on the controller, the harder modes use more buttons on the controller. Mm. But regardless of what difficulty you're playing at, the cues are the same in all songs in Guitar Hero. So what Rhythm Heaven does that makes it a really compelling and interesting game, and one that's had, like, a long-lasting legacy, is that each individual song effectively has a bespoke set of cues for it, often those cues being integrated strongly into the music. So some of these games might involve you filling robots with oil. Some of these games might involve you playing badminton while flying over mountains. Some of them might involve playing ping pong.
And golf is one of the famous ones. Yeah.
Yes, there's a golf in the Wii version. But a lot of these games, and they all have, like, very different cue sets. A lot of them fall into a few consistent patterns, like watch objects approach or hear a call and then respond to it, be one of three things and then follow the pattern of the previous two. But despite those sort of consistencies, because the game has simple inputs, you can pick up a lot of these games very quickly. Each one comes with a tutorial, but why the simple inputs really matters is, I think, when we get to the remixes. So the climactic moments at the end of sort of a sequence of mini games is a remix that incorporates many different games at once, rapidly cutting between them.
With a song that ties it all together.
You know, you might use one song to cover, like, a certain sound, one mini game to cover a certain sound type, another for this sound type, and so on. And this only works if you have consistent controls across all of them. you know you're going to press A for almost all of these games. That means that it can change them up quite considerably as you go through the remixes. The remixes often add elements that were not tutorialized. Like, in one game, you're chopping wood. And in the remix, they add pieces of wood that are much larger than you actually dealt with in the original game, or significantly thinner, which, you know, that would throw you off if it was something more complicated like Guitar Hero, but here it is manageable. You can quickly see it and make a choice about how you might deal with it. And usually your intuition is going to be correct because we're just pressing A at a different time, also guided by the music, which will help you keep in rhythm.
Yeah. There are at any given time probably 3 to 4 cues on when to press A.
Yeah, depending on the specific minigame. But yeah, about that many cues for a lot of them. Usually, like, you've got your hold long, your regular tap, and your sort of tap many times, sort of the main ones. With some.
Oh, no, well, but what I mean is, like, there are multiple cues, visual and audio, to tell you when to push the button at any given time. And so they, like, they quote unquote over design. Right. So that there are many ways for you to get an idea of when to do something, and then you feel good for doing it at the right time.
Every character, every like moving object in this world, like pulses to the beat, basically.
It's really great. It's probably the most design complexity in any of the games we're going to be talking about today, with all of it like laser focused in on can you push button on the beat? Because that's all Rhythm Heaven is. It's about pushing the button on a specific beat.
Yeah, and what I find really compelling about this compared to other things is that because it is consistent, it can really play with the cues in ways that you can't do in other games. Like, it can decide it's going to hide some visual information at the last minute, which would make... I'm bringing up Guitar Hero because it's the most famous rhythm game, probably. Like, if you were to cut off visual information at the last minute and something like that, players could easily get lost. Here, the game can trust that players are getting familiar enough with the beat that it can pull those tricks. So by simplifying inputs, it allows so much more complexity in every other aspect of the game, whether it be like setting cues, obscuring those cues, and so on. What's interesting that probably in this list, like we talked about how a lot of the games here might be like fairly casual and Flappy Bird is in that sort of most casual sense. Rhythm Heaven occupies a weird sort of place in that in Japan, it's very much like pushed towards young children. Especially like in the most recent edition where you have like story and looking at how that's written, it's very for young children and how the text is presented. But in the West, it's got a little bit more of a more hardcore following because these are difficult. You're going to fail a lot of these first time when you do them, because the game can expect fairly precise timing from you because there's only one thing to worry about usually.
So talking about like learned skill in a design space, Rhythm Heaven will reward you if you have good timing. If you are naturally good at listening to sound, to music and beats, or if you're trained in it, either or, you will have an easier time with games like Rhythm Heaven. This isn't actually true of every music and rhythm game that I'm aware of. I know sometimes it doesn't translate that well. I do not have very good music theory knowledge, but from what I do understand is that Rhythm Heaven respects the... There's a word here. I'm just going to describe it very badly. The expected construction of musical rhythm, for lack of a better word.
It also helps Rhythm Heaven, compared to most rhythm games, that each of these songs is bespokely created for the explicit purpose of that minigame. So it's designed to factor in the sounds of the game. Then, like Guitar Hero, all those like little sound effects when you hit notes, or Project Diva when you get the notes and you get a little cymbal sound, they're just noise on top of it. Whereas here, they're integrated. They're a part of that experience very corely, which also helps you notice the cues and the backbeats in the song that you're supposed to be listening to.
I'm sure better, more musically inclined people would have much more to say about Rhythm Heaven.
But we're not talking about the musical composition of this game. Like, we're really talking about how this... We're taking down the inputs to a certain level so that we can focus more on these other aspects.
That's right. That's the
So important. Simplifying inputs here lets players divert their attention to parts of rhythm games that we don't get to focus on as much, which makes it a distinctive experience even today. I say even today. This is a game from 2015. That's not that long ago.
So here's the thing I can say. If you are interested in rhythm games and have liked them but find them, you know, a bit hard to get into, Rhythm Heaven's a really good like entry point. It doesn't ask too much of you in terms of like dexterity and coordination. It's one button. So it's much more about your reaction and ability to discern beat.
And it's also just really charming. It's full of so much charm. I love it. It's very unbiased for me in this list. And with that, I think let's move on to our next game, which isn't quite as positive, I think. Negative Nancy is a 2021 visual novel by Feed Games, who describe it as, Negative Nancy is a choose-your-no adventure for people who have had enough, an interactive sitcom where you can only say no or nothing at all. And I quoted their own copy for this because I think it gives a good impression on what this is. So this is a very simple adventure game where every now and then you'll have prompts to either continue the conversation or say no. You use the left click to say no and use the right click to say nothing. So it's very simple.
Abstracting it away, we had Flappy Bird, which is literally one button to ascend, Rhythm Heaven, which is one button to hit a beat and occasionally another button just to do a mini game thing. And now with Negative Nancy, it is two buttons. We are firmly in the realm of two buttons. There are two things that you do.
We've gone from a unary system to a binary system. So massive amounts of complexity here. But what's interesting here is when we think of visual novels specifically, and the genre this is in, we don't think of them as a genre that needs simplification.
At least not mechanical simplification.
Not mechanical, not input simplification. Like
choosing
one of three choices, like do you want to hang out with girl A, girl B, or girl C? That's usually a pretty easy thing to work out. But what's interesting here is that by changing it to a single or two single consistent choices that you're making, say no or say nothing, you create a very different feeling. So you know what the two choices are in all situations. You don't need to think about it too much, but you do need to think about what specifically you're responding to. So a lot of times, no is not the right answer. Like there'll be times when like your friend will ask you like, you know, do you like being my friend? And you probably don't want to say no here. And kind of like in Flappy Bird and Rhythm Heaven, we're obviously keeping a rhythm. You get in the habit of just regularly pressing the button, right? In visual novels, sometimes you can get in the habit of just like clicking at a regular pace because you want to read the dialogue, which makes sense. So Negative Nancy is kind of set up to know when it thinks you're going to be doing that and to throw in a thing that you probably don't want to click through. So you should be doing the opposite action now when you were doing one action before. And so it's interesting how it uses the simple inputs to, rather than maintain the flows like these other games had, to actually actively break the kinds of things that you would do in other similar games.
Yeah, there's a degree as well to understand that not saying anything is not implicit yes. Which is an interesting space that the game explores because, you know, In Negative Nancy, saying nothing is the opposite of no, very clearly, but it is not contextually that, right?
There are many conversations where you could say no, but not saying no doesn't mean that you agreed. It just means you're not interrupting them quite often.
And it's really interesting to see conversations being broken down through this lens. And we start to get into the, I don't know how well this will translate to someone not as well versed with stilted video game conversations. Number one, if you're not as familiar with visual novels, I already don't know how well this will grab you. Probably okay, because it has good humor, right? It has good internet/video game humor. But then if you don't understand how stilted conversations can be, there is that barrier to work over as well. So because they have set themselves that interesting design challenge of, you know, we'll make this game and effectively have one input or continue the game, so two inputs, then, you know, this is the game that comes out of it, but that limits the approachability of it. So while the game is very simple, I'm just super not sure whether it's approachable.
It's simple, but it only is really meaningful to people who are actually familiar with the conventions it's playing against.
Yeah, so because you simplify your controls, you have to then in this case, what they did was they adopted complexity in language effectively, right? Like media.
Yeah, like there's lots of like, I'm not going to say they're tricky phrasings, but lots of phrasings that like, that wouldn't be how a regular person would say it, but they're trying to lure you into saying no when you actually should just say nothing.
Which is super fascinating. So, you know, if you're interested in this, this is the start of these games are simple to control, but there's a lot going on, like a lot more going on behind the scenes that potentially make them not approachable. Every game in this list is interesting and complex, but we're getting into the super sure how approachable this game is. This is not going to be a game for everyone.
Mm. And with that, let's move on to our next game.
Reigns is a kingdom management game from 2016, developed by Nariel, designed, written, and programmed by Francois Alliot. I apologize if that is not how to pronounce that name.
This was also a bit of a phenomenon within like certain circles.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Not as big as...
Nothing can be as big as Flappy Bird.
No. Yeah, that's very true. Let's get through what this game is. So this game has a very specific style that uses phone app interface conventions, primarily the Tinder swipe with swiping either right or left to choose this or that. And that's your primary way of interacting the game. In general, right for a positive, left for a negative. But, you know, often enough, it is right for A, left for B.
Do you want to support the church or the military might be like an example of the kind of non-yes-no sort of binary you get. Yep.
And we'll get into a bit of why you would pick one or the other. But I just want to say up front that we are still in the, you know, two input possible games here. It's like left or right. Yes or no, A or B. That's it. That's all it is. Why would you pick A or B? You have four statistics that you are keeping track of. This is a management game and you don't have raw numbers for them. You just have bars and you need to keep these bars between the extremes. They cannot deplete and they cannot fill. You have to keep your kingdom in balance of not overrun by the church, but not snubbing them completely, not overtaxing your people, but not like raising up the common man too much, not giving the military too much power, but not having no military power, not being bankrupt and not being overly rich that all the rich people take over.
Mm-hmm. And it's
surprisingly
really
complicated.
It's surprisingly complicated. There's a lot going on. Much like any sort of kingdom management game, like there are so many variables going on here, but why Reigns, I think, like got the foothold it did is that it takes what I think is a very compelling genre. Like kingdom management stuff is really cool when you hear people talk about things like King of Dragon Pass and even like 4X games. They always sound very cool. Like who hasn't heard Crusader Kings stories? I mean, like, I want to play Crusader Kings and then played Crusader Kings and gone, no, I can't play Crusader Kings. This is the democratization of Crusader Kings. Although it does not have as many like gay popes and things as that game is famous for. Not that I know of anyway. I haven't gotten that far in this. But what it does is it takes this very complicated genre and brings it to a series of choices that you can generally comprehend some level of outcomes of. By abstracting it more, it makes it more tangible in a weird sense, because each time it is a person asks you a question and you're given those two answers. It's not just this broad menu that you don't know what to deal with, right?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. A lot of the times the problems with management games comes from unintended consequences, unforeseen consequences. You don't realize that this is a consequence of a decision you're making here. You don't realize that helping the merchant somehow weakens your army down the line. And Reigns is a game that does tell you. So, you know, as you are trying to hover your decision, what stat will change. You get an indication of that. But, you know, you don't know what options you'll be given in the future. So the trick here is that you have to deal with the situation in front of you. You must choose one way or the other, and choosing to go down or up on a stat, you may not get the chance to undo that down the line. And remember, you have to keep everything in balance. You have to keep your four statistics in balance. So you will have to choose at some point to lower military raise church. But down the line, you must somehow be able to reduce the power of the church and build up your military again, that kind of thing. So it gets that kind of broad. I didn't intend for this to happen, but it did, down into this choice thing. It means that I spent a lot of time just kind of staring at my option and then like thinking about what I can potentially see. For how simple the UI is, there's a lot of thinking that goes into my runs, at least, for this game.
Mm. And what's cool is that as you play more, you actually understand the consequences more. So you know, like, oh, if I accept this offer, I'm probably leading to this. And if I recall correctly, in the later games, when you finish runs, potential cards get added to the deck. So you're not always able to coast by on just memory of, oh, this can lead to that.
Yeah, the game actually has an unfolding cast of characters to meet and add to your rotating problems. This is a very roguelike game in terms of like the length of it. So if you really want to break it down, Crusader Kings is pretty roguelike, right? But Crusader Kings is very deterministic. I take that back.
But it's very systems driven.
Yeah, so that it's almost random based on what you choose to do. Sorry, getting back to the point here. The order in which you receive events really changes how you approach them. And that does get shuffled up between each run. Each run is relatively short. If you're bad at the game like me, a run will take you 10 minutes.
Yep.
A lot of that is not making decisions. It's just staring at a decision.
And we should say, like, the game sort of, the metric of success is not winning, right? It is just how many years you reign.
Yeah, when a statistic either depletes or fills completely, the king you are playing is killed, and then you get the next king in line, basically, in this game. And then, yeah, I do think that this is one of those games where, because it's a series, it does get more interesting as the series goes on. I've only played Her Majesty, which is the direct sequel to Reigns. The flow is a bit better. They get a bit better. So there's a certain amount of bogged downness where, because there's so much decision making involved in every step of the game, it feels a bit slow. I feel like the language they use and the presentation that is given to the player gets a bit better down the line. I feel like they simplify the encounters just a bit, you know?
A lot of smaller choices as well, I think.
Yeah. And it's small enough that I would recommend, if you're interested in simple controls, this is a really, really good one to just look at how binary choices can affect you. And even how locking yourself into a very stylistically good UI gives you certain problems. Like, there are some times when you just need exposition to happen, and the left and right are like, what? Who? You know, like, effectively meaningless, but they still take the effort to, like, differentiate them. And it's just for the sake of exposition happening. Like, if you start to pay attention to the UI and the specific choice, this is a great game for, like, specific word choice. Because that's all the complexity of this game is in words and numbers, and the numbers are hidden from you. Really interesting, but very different from... Negative Nancy is all about words as well, but it's a very different feel from Reigns.
Yeah, Negative Nancy is all about... Yeah, it's a very different approach to being all about words. And Negative Nancy is like a fully planned... Like, there are only so many paths. In Reigns, because it's a deck of cards, effectively, and while there are things that lead into certain things, you're always going to have a different run, even if you try and make similar choices.
And with that, we're going to come to our final game, which is going to be a lot more than just two choices. Vampire Survivors, to date this episode, in the year of 2022, is currently in early access, in relatively early access. I think it's like 0.3 at the moment. Is a run-based action roguelite developed and published by Ponkle, attributed primarily to Luca Galante, with a small team of supporting programmers, artists, and I think there was a community manager in there. Very happy to see that kind of credit.
Community manager is very important.
They are, especially for this one. We'll talk. I'm going to talk very briefly about the context for this game, since we did about Flappy Bird as well. This one is a game that I feel like we normally stray away from something that's so early access that a lot of it's possibly going to change down the line. But it is very simple in terms of its controls, and we'll get to that. But it did rise to popularity because a couple of content creators played it, liked it, and then it kind of spread like that. So it's a different space to Flappy Bird, but possibly one of the more popular games on this list, which is interesting.
At least in the current minute.
In the current moment, yeah. And that's kind of why it's like interesting to talk about that right now. But yeah, that's all we'll say about that at the moment.
Hmm.
The concept for the game is very simple. Where a lot of the previous games cut out movement completely because it wouldn't make sense in a lot of them, Vampire Survivors cuts out any action in the main gameplay sequence other than movement. It is a survival action roguelite, and all of the ways you deal with enemies coming at you are attacks that are automatically done. The attacks happen automatically. You have no control over them. You just control where your character is moving. Relatively straightforward. If you ever like have a look at a video of it, very simple game. You move, and then your character attacks based on what weapons you have automatically.
Mm-hmm.
You also, the monsters that are attacking you don't have ranged projectiles. They only damage you by hitting you and like moving against you, basically dealing damage per tick of time. So that means that the only projectiles on the screen you have to worry about are your own.
That's right. And they're very consistent, right? I only got about 15 minutes in of like the 30-minute runs that this game has. Enemies just come towards you. Paces might be different, but generally it is enemies move towards you, right? There's not a lot of like complicated attacks going on or anything.
No, there are no complicated attacks. There are certain movement patterns.
Oh, like swarms of bats and things like
swarms
that.
Swarms of bats that sweep across the screen, rings of plants occasionally. You have elite / boss monsters, some unique stuff. Yeah, that kind of thing. So enemy pattern is very digestible, and it's a very simple rule as well. Enemy don't touch you, you are okay. Like, to like very massively simplify it. So long as you're not touching an enemy, you're okay. So how does this present a challenge? Well, you kill thousands of enemies by the end of a good run in this game. So you are trying to manage your position on screen. You're jockeying for position in a lot of cases. So this is fairly reactive as a game play style. It means that since there's a lot of enemies on screen, you have to move into spaces where there aren't enemies. The best chance of you not having an enemy there is because you killed it. Enemies also don't spawn mid-screen. They always spawn off-screen and walk in towards you. So you won't be surprised by moving into a space and then poof, an enemy appears. That won't happen in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can kill an enemy, you can then walk into the space where that enemy was. And although that sounds simple, you can still just be overwhelmed.
Because there are always a lot of enemies on screen, especially like as the game progresses. Early on, not too bad, but quite often you will find just a lot of things on screen at once, especially when you're sort of between phases where you have a lot of like the last enemy the game was spawning in a lot of, and you're getting a lot of the next thing because you're on to the next wave of things.
Mm-hmm. And it's all fairly simple so that you, and based on time, when you play it enough, you know what to expect out of it as well.
And the thing that makes this sort of roguelite-y is that as when you fight enemies, they drop experience orbs, jewels, and when you get enough of them, you level up and you can get one of three things. And they can range to new attacks.
Three or four.
Three out of four. You can get four, can we? And they range from improving a thing that you already have to adding a new automatic attack that will come out periodically. And so on and so forth.
Or a passive ability.
Or a passive ability.
Passive abilities are things like you have more projectiles coming out of you. You have more health. You have health regeneration. You know, those kinds of things.
Mm.
That's the rogue part of the roguelite. The roguelite part of it is that you also sometimes earn money from breakables in the game. And this money is an out-of-run resource that you can upgrade your character permanently. All your characters at once, actually. So yeah, it's probably the most complex system-wise of the games we have today. But it does boil down to the moment-to-moment gameplay of walking around a screen. You can't exactly play this with just a control stick or a D-pad. Unfortunately, you do need a button to select things when you level up. But yeah, the moment-to-moment gameplay is purely movement-based. And it's about jockeying for position. And there's a surprising kind of depth that comes out of this simple gameplay because, well, first instinct is I keep as much distance as I can from everything. If you have a fully ranged attack, this still works, right? But eventually you get swarmed in, you get pushed into smaller spaces, and then you can't do that. Some attacks have limited range. Easy example is the whip. It always goes out horizontally from you. So you have to be on the same line as the thing you're trying to hit, and it's not infinite range. Mm. So you have to get kind of close.
And there are other weapons like the dagger that will fire in whatever direction you're walking in.
Where you're looking at. Yeah, that's right.
You'll get a feel for the timing of it. And you'll start deliberately like going, oh, I'm going to just walk a little bit this way so the dagger will go this way and then continue going back the way you want it to actually go.
And timing's a really interesting aspect of this game. So we've had a couple of like just decision-based ones. Timing's something of a concern in Negative Nancy. Totally not a concern in Reigns.
Very much a concern in Rhythm Heaven.
Yeah, this has a lot of... This has some overlap with Rhythm Heaven of like you do care about when your attacks happen.
You need to keep an internal rhythm. Yeah.
Yep, definitely. One of the things that becomes available to you later on is if you buy armor upgrades, you take a lot less damage from enemies, which means that I occasionally find myself walking into packs of enemies and taking damage just to have an attack go off inside of them. So that no matter which way the attack goes, it's going to hit something. And then this tends to be for attacks that bounce. So yeah, walk into a pack of enemies, let a bouncing attack fly. And I, you know, want to do this as quickly as possible. So time it so that as you're in the middle of the pack, the attack bounces and you just keep walking through it, that kind of thing. And it's an interesting escalation of value proposition of how much damage can you put out into the things around you, because you need to kill things to be able to get experience to level up. Playing safe will likely kill you. Like, if your weapons aren't strong enough, as the game progresses, the stronger monsters start to swarm you, stronger enemies start to swarm you, you will just die. Mm. Really, how do I cap this off nicely? It is not deceptively simple. It does not look like a simple game, as opposed to a lot of the other games that we've talked about. But once you pick it up, there is definitely a point where you go, oh, this is all you need to do. And then you get the complexity building back again with like what decisions you have to make with what weapons you have and how do you move based on those weapons.
To me, one of the very genius things of this compared to other similar games is that it's very easy when you're playing something like Hades or Wizard of Legend to like not use every tool that you have. Like you focus on using a few of them and you keep forgetting, oh, actually, this thing with a longer cooldown is over, so I could use that again.
Yep.
In this game, you're always using things the moment that you can use them effectively, which can feel wasteful. Like there are lots of times like you use an attack comes down, it's like there was nothing there. Would have been nice to use that when something was there.
Mm-hmm.
But by always having them around, you don't have that sort of issue with cooldowns in other games where you want to save something when it's going to be useful, and then you just forget to use the thing when it actually would be useful.
Mm.
In this, you're always using all your resources, which I just think is really neat and sort of emphasizes kind of the spirit of a lot of this genre.
Tying it back to approachability, I actually think Vampire Survivors is very approachable. Readability is another thing. So I think any player would understand how the game functions and why they would lose in any given scenario. But whether they can keep track of everything on screen as well as all the weapons they have and how to best use it is another question entirely. So yeah, we've had this curve of like Flappy Bird is so approachable, right? And I really think anyone could pick it up and understand it. Whether or not they'll be good at it is a completely separate matter. Rhythm Heaven is pretty similar. It's pretty readable, honestly, all things considered, because there's so many cues for the same thing. I'm going into like summary now. However, the next two of like Negative Nancy and Reigns, they start to ask like weird questions of the player that if you are not familiar with the genre, you may not necessarily have an answer to. But then while Vampire Survivors is more complicated input wise, it's very simple, right?
Hmm, it's comparatively simple to its genre.
Keep your dude alive, keep your player alive, and kill all the bad things. And at some point, you will die if you don't understand the meta systems around it. So, yeah, with that, we can probably move to wrap up.
Yeah, let's move on to a wrap up. One, two, three, four, one. Usually, we would put in our little summaries here of what we've talked about, but we've already done that in the Vampire Survivor segment, so...
Oops, sorry. But also, yeah, that was basically it.
So we can move straight into the thank you for listening, everyone. If you want to talk with us about anything we discussed or correct us or even suggest games that maybe we missed for this topic, you should tweet at the show at Platinum Pit. We always love talking about these games. You can also find our personal Twitter accounts, Facebook page, and email in the show notes. If you enjoyed the show, why not recommend it to a friend? Or if you're feeling especially fancy, possibly even review it. We usually have our next time preview. So at the moment,
life is weird shaped.
Life is weird shaped at the moment. So we're going to be taking a bit of a different format for a while. They're going to be much lower prep and much lower editing based episodes.
The hope is that we will still have something out.
Yeah. Every month you'll get at least one thing.
I don't know if we want to guarantee that.
Every month you'll probably get around about one thing.
We hope to deliver one thing, but it will not be a full episode.
Yeah, it'll not be our standard programming. But it should still be interesting if you like the kind of content that we've been making for the last several years.
Maybe.
It should be interesting. Not good. Interesting.
Yeah.
I hope anyway. So the first one of these will be a bit of difficulty discourse with Dark Souls. Very exciting. Very controversial.
For reference and context, this was recorded a while ago.
Before
Elden Ring came out, in anticipation for the fact that this discourse would happen again, and it has, unsurprisingly.
So we hope you enjoy the next several months of us doing some different things. And with that,
thank you all for listening.